Floating format tonight. Our special guest tonight, Colette Baron-Reed, will be with us for 2 hours. And we'll be back in a moment as we go messages from Spirit. Okay, you turn on the radio and you hear something that speaks to your exact situation, or perhaps you overhear a conversation between strangers warning you of a terrible storm. These are just a few of the many messages from Spirit received every day by ordinary people. And we're going to bring in Colette Baron-Reed, an internationally renowned intuitive counselor, educator, and healer who helps others recognize and connect with their own intuition, potential, and purpose. Here she is right now. Colette, how are you?
I'm caffeinated, George.
And you better be. Now, I hear you're right up the street from me.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's amazing. And I got to tell you something. You are on my wish list. It's too wild. When you put out Worker in the Light, I'm telling you, this is one of the books that I highlighted more stuff on and bought it for a whole bunch of my friends and made my clients buy it. And I said to myself, I want to meet this guy. I want to have a talk with him because there was so much in the book, right? So I just kind of put it, and I thought, no, I'm not kidding. And I'm like, I really want to meet him one day and talk to him. And then like, I'm in St. Louis. It's a good thing I'm in my pajamas anyway, so it's better you're there and I'm here.
Yeah, right, for both of us, right?
Oh, my God. And listen to this, too. It's funny because I am not a nighttime person, but...
You are caffeinated, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
No, this is what I...
Oh, no. Ask my husband. I'm like this all day.
Okay. That's funny.
Should I stop talking now?
No, not at all. You keep talking, I'll keep you for the full 3. I understand you can go, 2 hours tonight?
Yeah,
right?
Well, you know, I was just worried I might fall down after. I didn't think 3 hours would work in the middle of the night, but I know I can do 2.
We'll do 2 with you. Don't worry.
Okay. I'm a first timer. We used to get you in, I'm Canadian, right? And, we get you on the AM channel up there. And
oh, we're all over Canada, yeah.
In Toronto, the only time I would ever listen to nighttime radio was when after, because I used to sing, just before you took over from Art Bell in 2002, mm-hmm. You'd be coming on, you know, pretty frequently, but not all the time. So when I would go home, there you'd be in the radio, right? And I'd be like going, oh, I really like this, but then I'd pass out.
Well, we're going to keep you awake for 2 hours.
Excellent.
But so what brings you to St. Louis?
I'm here on a book tour. Well, I'm actually on a speaking tour, 36-city speaking tour.
That's intense.
It is. And so sometimes I go to the closet instead of the bathroom.
Yeah.
So
cleaning people get upset.
Yeah, you know, what can I say? But it's great. Actually, the St. Louis audience is amazing. So I had one of my first few standing ovations, which is great. They're so friendly here, and they were great. So I really dig it. It's great.
Yeah, they're great people. And I have heard so much about you and your abilities. Let's go back a little bit. How did this all happen for you?
Well, I think I would go back to my early childhood in the conversation, and always hindsight is 20/20, right? So I'll describe how my first experiences with what I call retrocognition happened, which is knowing details of the past, right? So from the age of 3 to 5, I would have recurring dreams. Now, of course, again, it's only in looking back that I could see the relationship to intuition, but I dreamt of details, and the details were the same all the time. I would see clouds of ash, gray ash. I would be very frightened in the actual dream state. I saw body parts, you know, blood. I'd see like buildings crumbled and what looked like zeppelins, but, you know, there were balloons in the sky. And then I'd see the same thing where I'd see this very skinny skeletal man sitting at a table looking at teeth, and this was no tooth fairy, okay? So this is like gold and whatever, silver, and I remember being very frightened and then seeing the same man or someone that looked like him being shoved into an oven. Now, and this would happen frequently, and the interesting thing was that my mother's reaction to the dream, because usually a parent's going to come in and that little kid's going to tell the parent, this is what I'm dreaming, mommy, 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 and then the mommy's going to go, oh, sweetheart, it was just a dream. And hug them.
Yeah.
But my mother recoiled from me. And that was indelibly etched in my psyche at that time. And it was the sense of being rejected from describing something. So, and I'll just fast forward to 20 years later when my mother basically told me why she experienced that. Now, I was raised a Christian, and it turns out that I was a Jew. And, surprise! but my mother was from Berlin, and my grandfather was killed in Dachau. And so she told me that the teeth on the table were very common. They would pull it out of the interred heads and use the metal for trinkets for the SS officers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and body part. My mom picked up body parts in Berlin during the war, and the ash came from, which you saw that, I saw that in Schindler's List too many years later.
Right? Yeah,
you know, yeah. Yeah, the ashes. So now I was a Canadian, right, living in Toronto, 3 to 5, there's no war. We didn't have TV. How was I going to know all those things,
that's
right?
That's true, that's true.
So the first experience I had with my ability to tap into that non-local awareness. Boy, I have had way too much coffee. I have to drink some water now. Okay, everyone is listening.
Have you ever heard of decaf?
Oh, my God. Yeah, but how are you going to stay up in the middle of the night with decaf? Does that work, too?
I'd keep you going. You know.
Well, I'm just not.
I've only had one person ever fall asleep being interviewed by me, ever in my career.
And who was that?
Wonderful person. She's a witch. And she came in late. She had a rough 2 days, flew in late. And so she did the interview in bed, on her back, with the phone tucked in under her neck,
God,
and her ear. And after about the second hour, I asked her a question. It's kind of funny because she's part of a pilot I did with Sci-Fi. And I said, Fiona, how you doing? And all I could hear is...
Oh my God! Well, you've had my friend John Holland on a few times, right?
Yeah.
I told him how excited I was as coming on because he knows I'm a huge fan of yours, right? So he goes, "Now just don't lie down."
I know it. It'll get you.
Drink a lot of coffee and sit up, Colette.
That's what they tell me when I'm in St. Louis. Do your interviews standing up. Don't lay down.
Oh my God. Oh, that's funny. That's too funny.
But anyway, so you had this ability early on.
Right. But now, you know, yes, I did. But again, you know, there was no environment that reflected back to me that this was okay. So as this, I'd say it's an aptitude or ability, right? Just sort of developed itself on its own, much like, you know, some people have prodigies of music prodigies, right? So you have some of us that have this, you know, and this tapping into this non-local awareness of other people's information, for example, which people find intrusive, right? So you're in the, I'm a little kid at school, and I'm in the middle of just playing with a little kid, and then I start talking about something that I thought they just told me when they didn't, but it was right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It was back there in your head.
Yeah, well, it was just there. I didn't know if it was back anywhere. I thought it was right in front of me all the time. And little things like knowing that there, you know, I like chocolate, right? That the chocolate cake I liked wasn't going to be there because I knew in my head it translated into the baker was going to be with the angels. Well, it turned out the baker died, right? But I got that the angels were going to take away the cake. So I'm trying to explain this to my mother, right? Like, there's not going to be any cake. We have to get the cake. The angels are going to take all the cake away. She's looking at me like, my daughter needs a psychiatric care already, right? So those are those kind of mundane things that come back at me as I'm strange, right? So on one hand, even though I was surrounded by some things that allowed me to believe that what I was experiencing was something that was real, I grew up in a society, like many of us do, in a religious training, you know, and with parents who were upwardly mobile, who changed their last names from their European history to fit in, you know what I'm saying? And
mm-hmm.
and this made me a little weird. This isn't going to fall into suit. You know what I'm saying? So it was difficult growing up. It was really, really hard.
Somehow you were able to, because when you're a child and then you begin to get older, this sometimes grows out of you or something happens and people lose these abilities. Because I think, Colette, that as kids, mm-hmm. everyone has got it and
yeah.
then they lose it. You are able to keep it. A lot of other people have had this ability. I have it somewhat, not like you. When I was reading part of the book where, indeed, you know, you do turn on the radio and something pops up and you know it's going to be there. Or, you know, you stumble into something where it might save your life or somebody else's. There's that field, Lynn McTaggart writes about it well, that there's something out there that is probably one of the most incredible forces of nature. And I'm just glad that people like you are beginning to understand it and write about it and tell the world about it.
Well, your book is pretty good too, okay? So, well, here's the thing. I mean, I came to this backwards, right? I came to it with experiencing it first and having a skeptical mindset. I wanted to learn about it so that it wasn't just some woo-woo thing that I was saying to people that I'm just part of this new agey thing and that, oh boy, I'm talking to the dead. You know what I'm saying? It was wait a second. I want to have some kind of intellectual framework as well. And I'm just super grateful too that, you know, there's so many average people that have this experience. This is not, I mean, what I have is, I guess it's anomalous in that it is, well, I can't counter cook, trust me. So there's lots of things I can't do, but I can do this, right? So this is my arena and it's my passion because I believe this is a natural phenomena. It is not supernatural. This is nothing spooky or woo-woo. This is something all human beings have access to. You've talked about it in your book. I experienced it first. It almost killed me. Today, I use it to help empower people.
You're an intuitive rather than a psychic. Big difference. Explain it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really branding, if you will, because I think there's a pejorative. The concept of psychic, to me anyway, and again, you know what, I am what I am, so it's language, but I'm a language freak, too, right? I like words. And even though that the traditional meaning of psychic just means pertaining to the soul, that's what the word means. It comes from psychikos, the Greek term. Mm-hmm. But it's been... You know, it's like a piece of tumbleweed that rolled down a mountainside and picked up a lot of dust and dirt, you know, and now when you say that to just, you know, to a mainstream kind of person, right, you'll say psychic, go, oh, yeah, 900 lines and fraud, you know, so they'll immediately go to ooh, woo, woo, supernatural. And so I want to stay away from that because I think, too, it also brings up the concept that I have it and you don't, and there's a disempowering dynamic between one person and another. And in, to call myself an intuitive, levels the playing field. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, like, how do you explain this? I'm going to tell you a little story. A dear friend of mine, years ago, was coming home late at night. Hard worker. He was in the television production business. Love him. He was smoking. Fell asleep. The cigarette somehow caught the inside of his car on fire, almost killed him, obliterated his face, burned it off, literally. I mean, in the beginning when I first saw him, and this is years ago, I mean, he had two eyes. That's it. He had no face. They have rebuilt him where he looks normal now. It's an incredible story. Got married to a friend of mine who used to be a makeup artist in St. Louis, and... out of the blue, and she has donated her time to work at burn centers in St. Louis. So they're out here somewhere. Mm-hmm. Out of the blue, she calls me on my cell phone. I had given it to them years ago. And she says, hey, how are you? Did not know I was in St. Louis. And, you know, you got to listen to the first hour of the show in order to know where I am at any given time, because I mentioned that. Mm-hmm. And... she said, I need a favor. And, you know, I said, Lynn, of course, whatever you need. She said, I need a signed copy of your book for a lady who is at the burn center out here in St. Louis. And I'm going to tell you a funny story. And she went on to tell me that when this lady came into the hospital, and her name is Mary, and she's probably listening now, her family, of course, distraught over her being there, obviously. And they asked for one thing. They said, she's got to have a radio. We don't care about a TV. We don't care about anything else. She needs a radio because she listens to a show called Coast to Coast. And my friend is in this room on her volunteer basis. And she says, oh, really? And she mentioned my name and they stopped and they went, yeah, how'd you know that? And she said, well, hold on. And so she picks up the phone, she calls me, and she says, do you have any extra books lying around? And I said, of course. So she said, would you just sign one and mail one to me, and I want to give it to her? Well, I'm in St. Louis for one more week before I head back to Los Angeles. And I said, Linda, I'll tell you what. Rather than mail you the book, I'll hand deliver it to her in her hospital room.
Uh-huh.
How about that? So I'm going to do that this week. But when you talk about synchronicity, mm-hmm. because I believe our lives are to help other people.
Yep.
I mean, this one moment, which is no time out of my life, may help this person, may speed up her healing. I don't know what it's going to do. But the point is that what are the odds of all this happening and it all clicks and it all works? That's what I can't understand, Colette. How does it happen?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know that I'm going to be able to give you an intellectual response to that, but I do believe in synchronicity, and I have a theory. How about? And I think all of us are theorists, really. I don't think any of us have the definitive answer to any of this. But having read, I've heard you on the radio, but I've also read your book, and I've reread your book actually again, and it's one of my favorite highlights books, by the way. And what you come across as is when you say you're a worker in the light, right? So when you commit yourself to being a worker in the light and you align yourself with a higher purpose, when you have an intention to serve, then you will find all manner of synchronicities align so that someone else who may need you and need whatever it is that you have done. And by the way, the book that I'm sure you're talking about, Worker in the Light, this book, right? So,
yeah.
And the information in there gives credible information about how this works and remote viewing and brings up, and you've shared your personal stories, and that can really help someone. So you have created this thing, and I'll call it spirit, right? And that's, I've had Lynn McTaggart on my show. I love her. She was another one on my wish list that I got this year. So.
Great.
And she talks about the field and stuff. But so synchronicity aligns so that your work or your light giving, if you will, is available to this person. Like, what were the chances of you and I being in St. Louis at the same time? I didn't solicit to come onto this show, right? I put you on the list, and kaboom, they phoned, right? So, and I'm like going, wow, I'm even in the same city as him. Isn't this cool?
Yeah, it just how it happens, though, just I keep shaking my head. You know, I'd like to say it's a divine power. I think it is. I don't know how and why it was created, other than I know it's there.
Well, that is a statement in itself that I think is really important, because so many times we want to look for materialist answers, right? So we want to know that there's a mechanics to everything. I mean, obviously that's what New Frontier Science is trying to do too, is trying to explain these types of phenomena to say, okay, well, the field is this, and if we put it in intention, and the particle is going to move, and it's going to turn into a wave and turn somersaults or what the heck it is, right? The point is that there's a mystery, but this mystery responds. You even talked about it on a negative level in there. How does it work? Well, you proved it by messing around with stuff. And I have been in some pretty unusual places too. But the power of intention, like the intention experiment, Lynn McTaggart, your intention is to serve. Her intention was to make that connection. And together, you came together at that moment, right? So that's, I think in hindsight, we look at that, and those are those wow moments that happen to me a lot where you talk about humility too, which I think is very, very important. I think humility and when we align ourselves with that greater whole, when it's not us, the all-powerful, it is that we're in alignment with something greater and more powerful, and we can serve in that. And I think that's that matrix that puts us together. So I don't know if that answered your question, but
it does. And we will be back on Coast to Coast in just a moment. Don't go away. And our special guest tonight, Colette Baron Reed, her book, Messages from Spirit. Hey, by the way, any of you in the Dallas area, if you would fast blast me, I need you to do some checking for us on a possible late breaking story. Anything going on there at the Trinity Bridge near I-30? I'm not going to say any more, but I'm getting one or two strange messages. If you're in the Dallas area, just tell me what you hear. Fast blast me, please. Back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Call it back we come. Here we go. How many people have this intuitive ability, but they don't react to it? They don't do the right thing?
Are you asking me that question?
Oh, yeah.
George? I'm just thinking about the liver and the prostate stuff. I mean, everybody's going to be so healthy by the end of the show.
Oh, this is a healthy program.
It
no
sure
doubt about
is.
That. I'll cure any ill.
Wondering how many other body parts I'm going to talk about. I think well, I know everybody has it, and we don't have any cultural support for one thing, so most people are taught to discount it. And, you know, as it's just a hunch is a statement that, so it's just a hunch. And, you know, when we work through our analytical minds and we're constantly filtering information through there, we miss that little moment of that, the intuitive moment, which comes from a different sort of knowing. It's a different knowing. So I think the entire population has this. By being human, we have this inherent. It is a natural gift for everybody.
Is there a science behind any of this?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, is there a science as in, is there study on it? Tons. Is there a science to it as is, can we show people how to use it? Yes. But it is all about sublimating the ego self, right? So the science to it is to find that kind of observer self that Eckhart Tolle talks about in his new book, A New Earth. You've talked about this in Worker of the Light with the meditation practices, and the idea that we actually have to walk beside our mental processes that identify us as ourselves, right? It's like me, 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 me. I talk about it in my first book, and I call it the me bubble. So there are therapeutic dissociative exercises that you can do so you can move beside yourself where you don't use the analytical mind. So, yeah, there is a science. It's provable through remote viewing. Does everybody want to do it? It's the other thing. A lot of people poo-poo it, right? Say, oh, no, I don't want to. So, you know, but it is something that one can learn and one can develop.
The messages that you send in Messages from the Spirit, and next hour we'll open up phone lines because we will probably get some incredible stories here. But just some of the lines on the back where, for example, a mother receives a message from her deceased son. I can't tell you, Colette, how many times people have called this program with stories of, you know, I saw my dead mother at the foot of my bed, and I knew she had died, and it was at that moment she had passed away. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, I'm going to tell you something about that, because I was very skeptical, and, you know, and again, I came to this profession, I call it a profession because I make my living doing this, you know, and I demonstrate what I call shared consciousness to people on stage. It's not about my power. But I was always very skeptical. I thought maybe I was just a really good intuitive that I could tell people the names of their deceased relatives, the circumstances of their death, and a message of some kind that would fulfill some kind of a question that they had. And by the time I got to Hay House, actually, I remember telling the president of Hay House, sitting in this office going, I don't talk to dead people, okay? And he's like, it's okay, you don't have to. And then, of course, I did. So I was like, change my mind. The point is that this is a very real, consciousness is immortal, and I know this for a fact now. I can only prove it because I've experienced it consistently on behalf of other people in public. So, and this is an average occurrence. This is not an anomalous occurrence, the only a small portion of the public. If you, like, look at your listenership. You have, like, what, 11 or 12 million people that call
in? They come and they go constantly.
And they call all the time. And people line up at my events. I just did one for 3,000 people, and all these people were coming up with pictures. And just quickly, I'll tell you a story what happened to me on this boat recently.
Sure.
I did this. I was in front of about 600 people, and I kind of call myself a medium hybrid because I do a kind of a triple thing where my forte is the psychology behind what I'm seeing to help empower the person. So I'll get the detail of the past. And then I will go into an analytical viewpoint, and then I will, and many times I will pick up somebody who has, I'll call it transition. I try to change my language a little bit because it doesn't feel right to say they've passed away. They've passed somewhere else. They just go somewhere else. So this one lady came with her two daughters, and I picked up information. I picked the name. I always get the name first, and I'll say, I saw the circumstance. I saw a boat. I didn't know why I saw a boat, but I saw that this was a husband who had passed, and then she piped up and said it was on this boat that he had passed, the boat that we were on. This was just recently. So she came up to me in what's called the Neptune Lounge after, and she and her two daughters said, oh, we're so happy. We made the connection. We know you couldn't have known those things, so we're very, very grateful that there was some connection. So she showed me a photograph of this suite with this orb at the base of the bed. Now, all the suites on these boats look alike on Holland America, right? So she said to me, this is how he died. I took this picture when we got on the boat, but this is the exact place where he died, in this cabin. And I got this developed after he'd already passed, but I recognized that was I took this picture the first day. Anyhow, so I then started picking up more and more information about this individual. And so I was very humbled by it. I'm always humbled by it because I don't know how it happens, to be quite honest with you. And I don't know why I got picked to do it, but I know that it's supposed to help people. So I went back to my cabin and just prayed, and as I always do, and just say, okay, if I'm meant to be a conduit for information, just use me, and if not, whatever, you know. So, and I try not to take it personally or make myself empowered by it. So, so anyhow, I go to bed that night, and I bolt out of bed, and thinking at 7 in the morning, and I like to get up really early at 5 usually, right? But I look, and I go, why is it so dark, and it's 7 o'clock? So I look at the clock, and it's 1:09. No. So I'm like, oh, please, right, 1:09, maybe I should listen to your show. But anyhow, so I take my book and go into the bathroom and read. And so then I'm all of a sudden I feel like I'm going to pass out. I get really dizzy. So I think, well, maybe it's time to go back to bed, right? So I look at the clock, and it's 1:30, and I almost didn't make it. So I go back to the Neptune Lounge in the morning. And the same lady is there with her two daughters yet again. So I give them all readings, and we're talking. And I say, well, did you get a cabin here in the boat? Did you get the same cabin that he passed? And she goes, no, we tried and we tried, and we couldn't get it. It was taken by someone else. So I don't think anything of it. And I say, you know, when did he pass? And she says, well, 1:30 in the morning. I went, really? I said, well, let me just tell you what happened to me last night. So I tell her the story. Well, it turns out I'm sleeping in the cabin that he died in, and on the same side of the bed, and he collapsed at 1:09 a.m. and was pronounced dead at 1:30.
See, isn't that something?
Isn't that wild?
And it happens time and time again.
And I'm never jaded by this. I think the whole thing is outrageous. And yeah, it's wild. I mean, stuff like this happens to me all the time. And I think because my intention is to be present to it, but I am never jaded by it, nor, I mean, I'm constantly going, holy moly, look what just happened. It's
well, amazing. Do you train people to get this out of them where they have this ability to see their intuitiveness?
Absolutely. And I my entire raison d'etre, and I really believe I've been given a second chance at life because I have a history that would prove otherwise, but all my seminars and workshops are about empowering people to do this for themselves. I don't want the power. I don't want them to come to me for the reading of Colette Baron Reed has power. That is completely defeating the purpose of having this gift. I demonstrate it and then show them how to receive it. In one of my seminars last year at the I Can Do It conference in Las Vegas, I had 480 people in the room. No, actually, that's a lie. It was 435. Somebody said it was 480. It was 435. No, I don't like lying. I'm a neurotic about
honest person.
I'm neurotic about. It's like if I make it. It's like the fish was this big. Okay. But anyway,
you're afraid the clouds will open if you don't tell the truth.
But honesty is important to me because I'm in a funky position, right? So yeah, you have to be always honest. Anyhow,
yep.
So. I'm just a stickler for that. So check it out. I put everybody through this meditation process and ask them, and it's really easy to do too, to sidestep your mind, right? It really is. So I get them to the place where they can receive information. I just tell them to forget everything they know and not judge anything that comes to them, right? And I pair them up with strangers, right? So I get them to look into the other person. I won't bore you with the details, but anyway. Here's what happened in one of the seminars. Lady and a man come to them. Then I get everybody coming to the microphone to tell the rest of the group what happened to them. And these are all average people come just, you know, to see what happens. So this lady and this guy come up and didn't know each other. The woman is shaking. She goes, oh, my God, this man saw something for me. And so they describe that he saw this man who passed away around this woman, and he saw this warehouse, and he saw lights. He saw these, like, lights. He saw these, like, tubes and didn't know what they were. Anyway, so she just explained it to the whole audience. She goes, and he knew the name Michael. So she says, oh, my God, he saw my husband. It was incredible because I was so miserable, and a month after my husband died, we owned a warehouse. And I walked to the back of the warehouse, and we had all these big fluorescent lights at the top of the ceiling, and there were 18 of them. And as I walked to the back of the warehouse, all of the lights went out. Now, this was a public event. So when I share these stories, I'm sharing things that other people have experienced with me. So this is not made up. Check this out. So we're like all going, wow, and isn't this great? And everybody's so excited that they can see something. Well, doesn't she walk back to the back of the ballroom, and guess what happens?
The lights go back on.
No, the lights all go off.
Oh, I thought they already were off.
No, the lights were, no, we turned the lights up. Sorry, the lights, no, in this ballroom, no, there were lights that went off, like one by one as she went to the back, just like in her experience. In the warehouse.
Oh, okay. I'm with you.
Yeah, you get
okay.
it? He was describing a warehouse incident that happened to her on her own in this warehouse, right? That she felt she'd
okay.
gotten. You get it? So
yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't describe it properly.
No, that's all right. That's all right. No,
yeah, and then the same thing happened in front of all of my audience. We can't make that up.
Is there some kind of spirit that is doing this through us, or are we doing it?
Well, I think a little bit of both, because if you look at the concept of consciousness, right? So consciousness, now we get into language here, because is it spirit and what does spirit mean? Then we get into either spiritual or religious language, or we get into the scientific language. And I think there's now becoming obvious that there's a bridge between the two. So if we use the word spirit, that there is a spirit or maybe David Bohm is a better way to describe this, the implicate order of all things, right? There's a causal spirit, if you will, or intelligence or field. And this exists as a consciousness that we are all a part of, right? There's a greater consciousness. And within that, we have individuated. So when we say we're individual sparks of God, for example, or you say individuated sparks of the divine, I mean, this is kind of the vision that I have of this. And we interact with it. So we put out an intention that we want to get a message, right? And then we don't know how it's going to come to us. Like, we couldn't have made that happen for her. Now, did she create the lights going out? You know, we all felt a presence in the room that we couldn't deny. And yet, no, we can't explain it. But just because we can't explain it, I mean, people thought the world was flat, for God's sake. So they used to think we had a geocentric universe, and the church used to burn people to stake for thinking that we lived in a heliocentric universe, right? So, you know, we don't know yet, but we do know something, and we know that there is something extraordinary, mystical, important, and meaningful. And in the bigger picture, it means that we have a responsibility to that, that if, in fact, we are all connected, what does that say?
Do you think that successful people, and by that I mean anything but making money, because I don't think you have to be successful to make money.
Or the other way around. Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. That successful people have this intuitiveness, have this ability, more so than people who aren't successful, for example.
Oh, that's a very interesting, because if we use the term success or wealth, interesting, because I'm writing a book about that right now.
See, with wealth, it's easy to gauge in terms of a barometer of what they're doing in their life. But it doesn't mean to me they're successful.
Well, actually, if you look at the terminology of wealth, we're looking at, if you look at success being a successful, okay, we won't get into that conversation right now, but
we're
not looking at materialism. We're not looking at material. We're looking
exactly.
at some, yeah, okay, so we can definitely use both words and we can. Okay, so here's the thing. Yes, I believe that a person's connection to an alignment to, say, the humility of being a small speck in the larger, and yet being responsible to all their faculties, intuition being as important as intellect and five sensory experience, they are successful. But a true success is somebody who is at peace with all that is. And I believe also true success is fully accepting what is in the now and the person and your own personal responsibility to be present to what is in front of you. And that is success.
Indeed. Let me get this quick story out, by the way. I mentioned something going on in Dallas on the I-30 Trinity Bridge. Indeed, they have a 6-foot diameter hole in the bridge. And they've closed it in both directions. During open lines last hour tonight, we'll open up the phone line. Some of you in the Dallas area call in and check. How'd you like to be driving and you hit that 6-foot hole? Call it. Jeez, old Pete. Too many problems on our bridges. We're spending our money in the wrong places, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of scary. I'm so happy that you got a chance to say that, because if people are listening, I know a lot of truckers listen to you. I had one come up to me today to tell me she's in love with you. He goes, "You're going to love George. I listen to him every night." I mentioned at the show today that I was going to be on your show. Everybody was like clapping. They like you a lot.
I'm a homeboy here.
Homeboy, I know. Missouri, it's good.
Hey, Animals. Have you looked at animals with this ability as well?
Well, oh my God, animals are my, you know, I'm very passionate about animals. As a matter of fact, half the book had to be edited because it would have been all about animals. They didn't ask me to write a book about animals. But I'll give you one example. My dog, well, I'm a real dog person. I have no kids and I have an affinity towards all animals. My husband teases me and calls me Snow White a lot because I go outside, there's a bunny and all the birds, you know, and I'm feeding them.
Well, that's cute though. Good.
I know, but I mean, I really am. But I also believe that, you know, the advent of monotheism, and again, I'm just saying this as a function of this, where the idea that we are somehow dominators of the earth, and actually, we if you look at the Chalice and the Blade, for example, Rian Eisler's book, it's a really interesting. If anybody's interested in explaining that whole concept of being either a partnership model or in a dominator model, and once we started to dominate and call the beasts that have no souls, we have done a great injustice to the natural world and to consciousness in general, because in fact animals are conscious beings. There's been tremendous studies. Jeffrey Moussant is an author that does a lot of studies, and one of them is called "The Pig Who Sang to the Moon," about the emotional life of farm animals. So we can't look at them just as things that we eat or things that we kill. And in fact, if we look at indigenous cultures and a lot of the research that went into my book, I try to make this stuff very accessible and very modern and just conversational, so that the average person can read it and go, "Wow, yeah, that's what happened to me," kind of thing, right? So if you look at indigenous cultures that believed in animism, for example, that there was spirit in all things, you will see that totemic information came through animals, or the animal messages. So they all represented something, and they still do today, because it's part of our collective. So I would say, in a general way, animals are messengers. They are oracle messengers, but our companion animals, very specifically, are our greatest teachers. We don't recognize that because we think they're cute pets. But in fact, I believe, and I believe this wholeheartedly, that when our animals come into our lives, they choose us, and they are also spiritually evolving with us. And if we can learn so much about ourselves by looking into the eyes of our companion animals, and it's not just about the cute love that we get, it's what they teach us at a soul level.
Indy, I'm going to give out your website, and let me spell it for everyone, even though there's a link at coasttocoastam.com. It's coasttocoastamreid.com. Is the book, where do you get it, Colette?
Well, you can get it at Amazon.com. You can get it on my website. And actually, we're going to have an interactive. We like to give stuff away for free. It's not always about the money, right? So we're going to. Is that the music that says we're coming back?
That's the music that says we'll be back.
We'll be back.
Okay. And hey, don't lie down, okay?
No, I promise. I promise. I'm not going to.
We've got another hour with you.
I'm going to have water.
All right. We're going to open up the phone lines. I'd like you to share your stories with us. Your intuitive stories next on Coast to Coast AM, along with Colette Baron-Reed.